Do they still make Go-Gurt?
Go-Gurt is disgusting.
They do. Okay.
Did you guys used to eat the Jell-O with the fruit cubes suspended in them?
No. Blech. No. No.
That's disgusting.
No, my parents loved me.
My parents did too. I just didn't eat those. All right. Welcome to episode 11 of the Guardian Project podcast. I am your host, Andy. And if you want to know what my fitness goals are, take a look at our newly spoiled Planeswalker, Oko. Abs for days.
Damn.
Truth.
And I'm Mike Coyle, filling in for Brian Leithead this week. And although they say to stay away from the crazy ones, when it comes to Anya, I'd tap that.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic Gathering.
All things.
What is on the agenda this week?
On the agenda today, we've got GP Vegas. We've got the new BNR announcement. We've got a segment for pulling value out of Commander 19 sets. We've got new MTG story spoilers. And we're going to review MTG State of Design 2019 article that was released.
We sure are. So let's do first things first and finish talking about Hogak for a while. We're gonna early go into two by talking about number one. And I feel like number one, which is GP Vegas, sealed Hogak's fate. It probably didn't matter, honestly. You were so close to the event, I don't think that event really mattered. But of the top eight, five were Hogak.
But there was like so much variation. There was a Crabgak in there.
There was, yeah. Still, if Hogak's in the deck, it's really good. Probably gonna win.
It sure is.
There were people that played Hogak for the first time at GP Vegas, and I followed them on Twitter. They're like, "You guys, I have like a 10-1 win rate with Hogak, and it's the only time I've ever played it."
It's,
I can't believe that.
It's too consistent.
It's real so good. So among the top eight, there were five Hogak, one Wurza deck, which is War of Invention, Thopter. I believe it has the Thopter combo in there, and Urza High Lord Artificer. Lord High? Lord, High Lord.
Lord.
Lord High. I don't think they said he's a High Lord.
No.
He's Lord High.
He's just Lord High.
And then two Tron decks. Yes. So real fun to watch that whole top eight. And then we had a banned and restricted announcement.
We did. We did. My buddy Hogak, he went down. I just built this deck 3 weeks ago. I'm upset.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it was coming.
He had it coming. In honor of this BNR announcement, though, I did write a poem.
Okay.
Wishing farewell to my buddy Hogak.
Okay.
Along with going over the two other high points of the BNR, specifically for Modern.
Okay. Let's go over. Okay. I want to hear this.
Okay. Okay. Necropolis risen, Necropolis down. Hogak, good riddance. Nobody frowned. Everybody happy, people all hooting. But why did you touch my faithless looting? Stoneforge Mystic unbanned at last. Wizards pays homage to Modern's past. Arclight and 8-Ball, Dredge and Mancer, all worthy sacrifices to kill Hogak the Cancer.
Yes. That was really good.
Thank you.
We need to share this with the greater community. That was really good, actually.
So, how do we share this with the greater community?
This podcast. We'll just have to pull it out. We can share people. We can share that as like a clip or something.
Okay.
That'd be really good. People want to hear this. People need to hear that.
I hope they hear it. So the other two high points of the BNR announcement being the banning of Faithless Looting.
Is that a high point? I think most people would say that is a low.
As a graveyard player.
You're sad.
I hate it so much.
I am surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see it coming.
Definitely not.
Ancient Stirring, still not banned.
No.
But Faithless Looting, goodbye.
Tron Forever.
Hello.
Hello.
Goodbye. And Stoneforge Mystic is unbanned finally. It was like a meme. It was like a meme joke, right? They're like, oh, I'm going to unban Stoneforge. Mm-hmm. And then it never happened. People have been doing this for like, it feels like a year. And then all of a sudden, It just happened. I don't think this time people were really expecting it to be unbanned.
They definitely weren't.
But I am surprised Bridge From Below was not also unbanned.
Yeah.
But I mean, I get their reasoning, and they said they just wanted to make sure that the play came back to the battlefield and not necessarily stayed in the graveyard.
It makes sense in a way. I mean, I still hate it. Because what do I do with my four Vengevines? What do I do?
Yeah. They said that they believe now is the correct time to make the change to ban Faithless Looting, but for the same reasons, they chose not to unban Bridge From Below. Unfortunately, Bridgevine is gone now. Like, that deck can't come back, I don't think. They said that as new card designs are released that deal with the graveyard, discarding cards and casting cheap spells, the power of Faithless Looting's efficient hand and graveyard manipulation continue to scale upward. Which, it's true.
It is very true.
But Stoneforge is unbanned. So, yeah. And that shot up from $30 to like $75 in one whole minute.
I am excited to see, because I never played Modern with a Stoneforge Mystic unbanned.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to see how it changes the format. I learned about the card Batterskull. I've never seen that card
really?
Before. Yeah, really.
You weren't playing that in SRAM in your commander deck?
No, because I want my equipments to get attached to SRAM. And that one.
Oh, for free? Yeah, I guess that one comes in on. That's a living weapon.
It's a living weapon.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. I own one, and I don't play it.
Oh.
I just have it. It didn't. I don't have any artifact decks. I don't have any equipment decks. So.
You should get one. They're fun.
Yeah.
And then you put it away forever.
Rampaging for Rastodon is unbanned for like, feels like for 3 weeks, but it's not. I mean, it's unbanned till the fall.
I don't understand this one, honestly.
Because it should have been done a long time ago. So Rampaging for Rastodon was banned because Mono Red was too good. So it's a 3-3 for 3 that has players can't gain life. I mean, that's the only relevant thing on there, but, well, it's not. Whenever another creature enters a battlefield, it deals 1 damage to that creature's controller.
Right.
So it was killing token strategies when Ixalan and all those sets were, I guess, before Dominaria. And then they just didn't unban it.
Right. Now, I mean, so obviously this is maybe not a main deck card, but a side deck or a sideboard card for against mono white life gain. But I'm not really sure mono red struggled that much against mono white life gain. So, and we have Tybalt from War of the Spark that does the same thing
for the life gain. Well, no, I think this is the dealing the 1 damage whenever a creature comes in.
I gotcha.
I think maybe the 5 damage that it can deal over the game is enough to have your, it's like essentially your opponent started out at 15 life. Cause you don't have to do anything other than play this card to have that happen.
That's true.
I don't know. I don't know if it's going to change anything. Certainly don't go out and buy these just to make a deck.
No.
That's probably a bad idea.
Don't
do that.
Not condoned.
Nope. And then we had some changes in Vintage. We restricted 4 cards, an unrestricted 1. So Karn the Great Creator, Mystic Forge, Mental Misstep, Golgari Grave Troll are now restricted. And Fast Bond is now unrestricted. I know nothing about Vintage, so I can't speak to most of these. But I have heard that Mystic Forge is just good in everything.
It's bonkers. It really is. Because it allows you to cast artifacts from the top of your library. And in Vintage, you're running just a lot of really low CMC artifacts. So you're able to just get them out for nothing.
I mean, it sounds like the reason specifically for these two was that Mystic Forge and Karn made the shops deck better by giving them more early game lockout potential through mm-hmm. Karn's static ability, tutorable win condition through his -2, fetching Time Vault, Voltaic Key, or Manifold Key, and Karn advantaged card advantage for prolonged games. So
they did also hurt Manaless Dredge by limiting Golgari Grave Troll. But I don't think it's going to get hurt too bad. They just won't get your Dredge 6 guy every single time.
Yeah, not so quickly at least.
Right.
And then it says Mental Misstep provides more opportunity for interaction, and it's also at its strongest against the most interactive decks. And they said Dredge decks often use Mental Misstep to protect their graveyard engine or to disrupt their opponents. They believe restricting this will open up more deck building strategies. And we can dredge. Specifically, they said we can dredge.
Mm-hmm.
So goodbye. not goodbye, but not as easy.
More graveyard hate.
More graveyard. And then Fast Bond is just, it's unrestricted now. So Fast Bond is you can play any number of lands on each of your turns. Whenever you play a land, if it wasn't the first one you played, it deals one damage to you for a single green. So that's kind of a nice card.
It sure is.
It says, many players suggested Fast Bond as a card they would enjoy building with four copies of, since most vintage decks rely heavily on artifact mana and play fewer lands, chances are that a deck built around Fast Bond would look quite different from anything in their current metagame.
It would be cool to see a lands mana deck.
In vintage.
Yeah, in not Commander. Or I guess there's Scapeshift.
I mean, there is just Legacy lands. That's a thing. I know that.
I do not know that.
I don't follow it too much, but I've heard that thing discussed.
It is a thing.
It is a thing.
Oh.
So the ban restricted announcement was huge this time. It affected a lot.
Definitely.
Prices are fluctuating on lots of cards right now. Don't buy cards just because their price went down. And don't sell all your cards just because their price went up. You just got to give it like a month to figure out where things fall.
And the BNR doesn't go into effect until August 30th.
August 30th.
So spam as many games of Hogek as you can and do not go down lightly.
So Magic Online effective date is August 26th. MTG Arena effective date is September 4th. So Rampaging for Rastodon is not actually unbanned yet.
Right.
Until September 4th. So we have like another week. But it's wild cards. Do you want to use your wild cards on Rampage? You might already have them. Honestly, you might already just have them. Can't use them.
I'm actually saving all of my wild cards to build Brawl decks. Very excited for that.
Yeah, that'll be great.
I hope it's great. Please, Arena, make it great.
And it'll be soon. I'm hoping it'll be multiplayer soon too.
Yeah.
So the next item or the next topic on our agenda is Commander 19 value. So I know you wanted to talk about how you can get value out of the cards that you just bought in Commander 19.
So some people consider me what they would call a spike when it comes to Commander.
True.
I don't agree, but that's because I don't want to agree. And that's mostly it. So as soon as I saw the C19 spoilers, as soon as I saw all these commanders, I just kept going through one by one and go, how can I break this commander? How can this commander be my
next
favorite?
That's a bad way to start. I don't think it's a bad way to start. And you just got to dial it back a bit because...
Dial it back on the Bears.
You have to dial it back because it's... When you play Commander casually with people, I don't know. People get upset when you have some degenerate combo that shuts everything they have down.
It doesn't feel good when someone plays their third tapped Gilgate and then you win that
turn. or when someone counters someone's Smothering Tithe on their turn two and then doesn't have a counter to counter my Smothering Tithe on my turn two, which happened on Saturday.
And then you relentlessly pay the two mana every time.
And I get no benefit from Smothering Tithe at all.
Felt good. Felt bad, then it felt good.
True story, y'all. But we digress.
Yes. So when I was looking through, I have a list of legendary creatures and ways that you can build around them to completely break them and make your friends maybe don't want to play Commander with you, but it'll be fun at least once.
One time. I'm cool with the doing it once and then being like, all right, I gotta make this a little less oppressive.
So first on the list is Anya. From the Rakdos Madness deck, the face commander.
Or, as we refer to her, Angie.
I love the name Angie. Can we just all call it Angie from now on? Just go against the grain. So, really, I think this commander shouldn't read that when you discard a madness card, you can untap her. Really, I think it should read, you can play your deck with 60 cards in it rather than 99. And you run 39 madness cards that are just, they're just filters. You don't need to cast them. You don't need anything with them.
So are we
them.
Looking for combos then? Is that what you're saying right now?
I mean, you can.
Do you draw a card as well when you or you just untap her and discard your hand?
You tap her to discard a card. If it's madness, you untap her.
Okay.
Yeah. However, those are two different effects. The second one is a static effect. If you ever discard a madness card, you can untap her. And I know we had a conversation about wheeling. With Anya.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to wheel three madness cards away, you get three triggers of Anya's untap. So once you draw your new hand, you can choose to discard cards basically for free and untap Anya. That being said, a lot of people are just playing World Gorger Dragon combo with an Animate Dead in there.
For infinite mana.
Infinite mana has if you do that. However, I'm strapping 28-inch rims to Anya, and I'm wheeling all day.
Wheel of Fortune, Wheel of Fate, and what's the miracle one? What's that one called?
Reforge the Soul?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it's Reforge the Soul. But then you got like Dark Deal and Black, and you run your enchantments like Liliana's Caress. You make it so everyone can draw cards, not just you.
That's so nice of you.
I know.
What if I didn't want a new hand of seven?
That's too bad.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Mm-hmm. Good to know.
If I was playing Nekusar, you could have a new hand of whatever the highest hand size is. So that's Anya.
Okay.
Next on the list, I have Elsha of the Infinite, which we were both at the mercy of dying to the other day.
That one. So we did both die to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think I killed you before, but then I died to it after.
Yes, that certainly did happen. So a lot of people, when Fibblethip got released, had this really cool deck idea called Creatureless Protean Staff, where you take your one creature, Fibblethip, and you put them on the bottom of your library, and you reveal cards from your library until you reveal a creature, which is at the bottom of your library. And then you rearrange your deck however you want. Elsha can be played the same way, except you can also cast the top card of your library at flash speed. So if you have a creatureless Fibblethip deck, just rebuild it as Elsha. It's fine.
Because you get to add white now.
You certainly do. And red.
I guess because that's mono blue, so you're adding two colors to your deck.
Also Sensei's Divining Top.
And about another, like, what, $2,000 in colored lands and to make sure everything goes well.
It's worth it. Just spend your money. All of your money needs to go to Magic.
You're worth it.
You're worth it. Just do it. Next on the list is Alta, our egg commander.
Isn't it Atla?
Atla?
I think A-T-L-A.
It's probably Atla. Okay. I'm just bad at spelling.
I'm going to confirm because now I want to know. She makes the eggs. Yeah, Atla. Atla Pilani.
Atla Pilani. She makes the eggs. Everyone knows about Thornbite Staff and Ashnot's Altar.
Explain those. Thornbite Staff comes in. If it's a shaman, you can equip it for free.
Yes. And the creature that's equipped with it, if you have another creature die, you can untap that creature.
Correct.
So you tap Atla, make an egg, kill it with Ashnot's Altar, make 2 mana, untap Atla, repeat, put all your creatures out. Just make sure you're running Craterhoof Behemoth and Anger in your deck. Otherwise, you're just gonna get board wiped and then lose.
I mean, you could, yeah, anger works, but I mean, I guess you don't have to have Craterhoof.
You need a haste enabler.
Anger.
Yeah, and then you have to swing with everything and make sure you kill everybody that turn.
I mean, it doesn't have to be everybody.
You have all of your creatures on the battlefield.
Yep. Seasons passed. Keep the seasons passed in your hand. Get them all back when someone wipes next turn. Backup plans.
Gotta have backup plans. The next commander on the list is my personal favorite. I call him Kirk. I think his name is Kirik.
And I'm going to call him Keurig.
Yeah, he's the son of Yawgmoth.
Keurig machine.
And Yawgmoth is like best character in Magic the house history.
The house brew with Phyrexian mana.
House brew Phyrexian. So an interesting thing that I discovered with Kirik is you don't actually have to run swamps to play this deck.
So are we building colorless Kirik?
Colorless Kirik. It just, when I say colorless, I'm only talking about the mana base. Colorless Kirik. Please someone build this and let me know what happens. I don't have any tips or tricks. Just build it colorless. Let me know what happens.
All the Eldrazi.
Maybe.
Or just rocks.
Just black spells. All the black spells. Just pay your life. Be at 2 life when you lose.
I guess, yeah, you can do that. Because you can pay your life to
instead cast. Of black.
Yeah. Is it 2 life for 1 black mana?
2 life for 1 black mana. Which makes Vilas broker of value. Just broker of blood. But he's broker of value.
So you play Grey Merchant.
Yeah.
Asphodel. It should get all your life back.
It's kind of, I mean, people are building it Doomsday, but that's boring. Because then you only have 5 cards in your library. And what's the best part of Magic?
drawing the cards.
And you can't do that more than five times with Doomsday.
True.
So don't do that. Okay.
I can appreciate that. Amen.
So next on the list, I have Chainer. Chainer, not Dementia Master. Chainer with red.
No, I'm pretty sure that's right. Nope. All right. I'm gonna look it up. We're Googling.
Joogling currently.
Nope. It's Nightmare.
Nightmare Adept.
Nightmare Adept.
Chainer, Nightmare Adept. I only have one note on here. It's kind of boring. You just win the game with it.
Is that what it says? Chainer, win the game?
It's Chainer, win the game.
That's your notes for this episode. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you cast Buried Alive, mm-hmm. and you throw a Necrotic Ooze, a Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker, and a Mog Fanatic.
What's Mog Fanatic do?
Mog Fanatic says, sacrifice this creature, deal one damage to any target.
Okay.
And you reanimate Necrotic Ooze, which gets all your activated abilities of all the creatures in your graveyard. And you use the Kiki Jiki ability to copy Necrotic Ooze as many times as you want. And then sacrifice all the copies to do damage to everybody. And you win.
But, oh, yeah.
Because Chainer gives Necrotic Ooze haste when you reanimate it from your graveyard.
I hate this. I did lose to a Chainer Nightmare Adept deck just the other night, actually. There was a buddy of mine was playing it at our local game shop. And he reanimated... He had Living End.
Oh.
After throwing like 17 creatures in the graveyard. But we did pick away a couple of them. So Kokusho was exiled from the graveyard. And there was something else. But what's the dwarf? The black dwarf.
Balthor the Defiled.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
And that got exiled and brought back things. And then we got Gray Merchanted for... Gray merchanted.
Yeah, no, that's a verb.
For like 16 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I can't come back from this.
No.
I was playing morphs, and I had a morph that was make a creature attack. It's like, this isn't going to do anything. We had the right setup, though. Someone had a Scavenging Ooze out, which can exile things, mm-hmm. and someone else had Farika, the snake god from the Theros block that yes. exiles... and gives you snakes. And I was like, you guys, we had all the tools to mm-hmm. do it, but it all happened before we could use the tools.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any of those because I was playing Kadena
mm-hmm.
and had no tools.
Do you like your Kadena deck?
I do. It's far more casual than any other deck that I have, except for Brine Elemental, which may just need to come out because it's too mean. There is the Pickle Lock. Brine Elemental of flipping it face up and flipping it face down and guaranteeing that no one ever gets another untapped step during their upkeep. And it's not fun. I experienced this with my friends. They were not happy. I got a triple scoop.
No,
I didn't. I got a double scoop. And then the next turn, I got a scoop.
Yes. Yes.
So I have not won with Kadena yet, except getting scoops.
Yeah, that's a win.
I mean, that's a win,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know how that deck really wins. I mean, it's fun to play a morph for free, draw a card, and then hopefully have out something that lets you play more for free or for cheaper. But unless there's some sort of a combo that I'm not aware of, or there's something better that I can use in that deck, I don't know how it wins yet, but I've only played it three times.
Well, I have a two-card combo suggestion for you.
For Kadena.
Because it's in the right colors, and I know...
Oh, it has nothing to do with morphs, though? It's just a combo?
It'll help the morph deck win. So there's this new legendary creature called Volrath.
Okay.
That he gets to turn into things with counters on them.
Yes.
And there's this really old, and by that I mean it was in Shadows over Innistrad, or...
That's not old.
Or the other one that's connected to Shadows over Illustrat block that I can't remember.
Eldritch Moon.
It's called Tree of Perdition.
Oh.
So you can turn Volrath into a tree and make someone's life total 5 instead of 13.
I mean, it helps, but it doesn't just win.
No, but then you just swing at him.
Sure.
And you win.
Against one person.
Just knock out the threat. Just not me.
So no, generally it's Mike Coyle.
No, don't kill me, though.
I always kill Coyle first, and then you're generally okay.
Just don't do that, though. Because okay. I gave you the idea, so you got
to
do it.
Okay, I won't. I definitely won't do it.
Okay,
to
perfect.
You. My fingers are crossed.
Oh, I hate you. But that's all I have for C19 value. I didn't go over any of the singles that are not legendary creatures in there. Just know that there's some busted stuff in these sets. Do you have any particular cards that you really like from the sets?
I mean, so I just added Dockside Extortionist to my Duretti Scrap Savant deck. I think that's a really good card.
It's so good.
When he enters the battlefield, create X treasures where X is the number of artifacts and enchantments your opponents control. So, I mean, it matters. I mean, maybe on turn two, it's not going to be so good, but maybe on, like, turn 8 or 9, you could get, like, 7 or 8 or 9 treasures in a 4-man pod. That's relevant.
Yeah.
You pay 2, get 8. It's like you got 6.
You see someone with a Smothering Tithe down?
I can do math. That's what I just did there.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was good math.
It was good math.
You do math.
I don't play Storm for that reason. I'm sorry. What's my Storm count? Oh, you weren't counting? No, I'm at 6. I don't know. I can't do math.
Except you actually do have a Storm deck built right now for Modern.
Twiddle Storm.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. I just built it. I figure out how to do math. The other card is Sudden Substitution, which unfortunately spiked today. Really good card. It was featured on Tolarian Community College on a video. Really good stuff. It has Split Second, which is the benefit, but it's 2 blue-blue, exchange control of target non-creature spell and target creature. Then the spell's controller can choose new targets for it. It works with all of the packs. So Pact of Negation, nope.
Yeah, it would work with Pact. Yeah. You would need a relevant target.
No, not Pact of Pact of Negation.
Yeah. Summoner's Pact.
Summoner's Pact is green. I mean, it works with any of the packs that force you to pay something at your upkeep. And if you essentially play it on someone, you play the pact, and then you use this card, take a creature from them, and give them the ability of the pact. They can't pay for it at their upkeep if you give it to the person that doesn't have the right colors, and then they just lose the game. It's not fun, but you can only use it once.
Right.
You know, unless you're playing all the packs and ways to get things back from your graveyard, which, I mean, I don't know what commander does that, but I mean, it's totally possible. And if you do it, tweet at us at the Guardian Project Pod.
Yes. Because I want to know about it.
Yeah, I want to know if you do that.
Yeah.
If you do that, that's awesome. And I want to know how many games it took to make it happen, too. Yes. If you played 30 games to make it happen once, I just want to know how consistent it is as well.
For sure.
And which commander you used. I'm assuming you're probably going to use a 5-color commander. Maybe a Niv-Miz.
Ooh.
Niv-Miz.
I like the Niv-Miz. That's a good idea.
I guess you play Morrifon, tribal with all 5 colors.
Oh, I love
Morrifon. Are there creatures that bring things back from the graveyard specifically? Wizards? Wizards?
I know a green shaman that does.
Which one? Loaming?
Eternal Witness.
Oh, Eternal Witness.
Yep.
I feel like Loaming Shaman also brings things back.
It might.
And now I want to confirm.
There's that Golgari one that brings things back too. 2 black and a green. Does the same thing as Eternal Witness.
2 black and a green.
I think it's in your cube.
I don't know. Loaming Shaman, when it comes into play. Oh, no. You shuffle any number of target cards from someone's graveyard back into their library.
And you Mystical Tutor for it. It's no big deal.
Yeah. No, so that'd be cool. So I like Sudden Spoiling. That's the other card that I really like from the set. If you didn't get one, you might as well just pick up the deck now, because the card's $20 alone. Just spend $40 on the deck.
Yep.
That's what you do. And I think that came in the Kadena deck. I don't believe that came in the Savine deck.
Okay. I cannot confirm.
Confirm that before you just buy one of them.
Yeah. If you want Kirk, it's in the Madness.
Yeah. Kirk's in the Madness.
Oh, Kirk. Kirk, my boy.
And then I think the next item on our list is the story update. So yes. We have, well, first we'll talk about a Planeswalker that was spoiled today.
Which Planeswalker?
Oko. So they are he is a Fae from Eldraine, and they did an interview with the person who helped create the story on him, and he is not a good guy.
No.
I don't know if he's like bad, but he thinks things are funny and they're not. Funny?
I like it.
Did you read the whole story?
I didn't.
Okay. So The first thing was that Oko is from a plane ruled by Fae who believe in a unified society, one where the ruling class has decided that for the betterment of all, the natural mischievous of the Fae must be suppressed.
That doesn't sound good.
No. And so they subjected him to magical procedures intended to suppress his powers, but only succeeded in igniting his spark. And he doesn't trust anyone because of all of the horrendous things they did to him. So there's that.
So they tried to get him down.
But he's a shapeshifter.
So he got back up again.
I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never going to knock me down.
No.
Is that the lyrics?
No. Never going to keep
me down. Keep me down?
Never going to keep me down.
Never going to keep me down.
Because anyway. They knocked you down. They probably will knock you down again.
So they asked the question is, what is the most interesting shape-shifting that he's done? Or are there any pranks that he's pulled off? And this was really dark. So they said that his pranks are very cruel, that he ruins wedding days, he steals spotlights at someone's lifetime moment of triumph, and fooled a mother into believing her child had returned from conflict.
Oh,
that's horrendous. It's so bad.
Did she end up finding out, or did she live blissfully for the rest of her life?
I have no idea. It says these are all great shape-shifting jokes to Oko, who sees nothing as sacred, least of all, most notable of emotions. So that's pretty rough.
This sounds like all of my unlawful D&D characters.
Yeah.
I think I'm in love.
Oh, it says which planeswalker does he get along with best? And it says that he generally avoids revealing himself to other planeswalkers. The best part about being a planeswalker, in Oko's opinion, is not having to ever deal with the consequences of your own actions. So,
wow.
Yeah, pretty crazy stuff. In the article, it says that the Oko art was by Chris Rallis, and it says this illustration gives us a clue to his mana colors. I have no idea if that's just the author's writing or if that's real, because right next to it says Wizards of the Coast, so I don't know if they said this or if the author said this.
Okay.
I cannot confirm, but it is a nature-based magic planeswalker who uses like thorn vine magic, and the vines are red, blue, and green. Which would be Temur, but if he's a bad guy, you would think Sultai, but I mean, Urza's a bad guy, and Urza was mono blue. So you could argue that he's chaos in red, and bad in blue, and green is the nature. So I mean, he could be Temur.
Now, when I saw the picture, I thought it was purple.
It's definitely like pink. I mean, I'm arguing that it's red.
Right.
But... I don't know.
That might just be me being hopeful because...
That you want a Sultai planeswalker.
I love Sultai.
Temur's pretty cool, though. It'd be interesting to see what they do with this character.
Definitely.
But so it's a shapeshifter that we've learned was controlling Garrick. So spoiler alert, I guess. Sorry. So it says Garrick is returning in the story. That much we know.
Yes.
He is mesmerized and enslaved by a fae planeswalker called Oko. It says the High King, father of Will and Rowan, is making a grand procession, a first harvest tour of all five courts of the realm. I'm assuming, and we can do some predictions here too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming this is a non-dual colored plane, because I don't know if we would do that coming out of Ravnica.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, we're not going to have many gold cards. I'm assuming we're going to have lots of single color cards and maybe a few two colored, like maybe. I'm assuming we're probably going to stay in the artifact and single color cards for this next set.
That makes sense.
And then it says Rowan's healer friend Cersei rides a bearded unicorn.
That's the biggest spoiler of them all. Bearded unicorn?
Yeah.
Bearded tribal? Unicorn tribal? Bearded unicorn tribal.
So you need to build a commander deck where every card in it has a beard.
Could you imagine if it said creature type bearded unicorn?
I don't know. I mean, I think that they could add a new creature type though, a fae, and not go with fairies.
Definitely.
Because you would think that they would have mentioned that it was a fairy. So fae is different than fairy,
right,
in the D&D world.
Mm-hmm.
And so Magic has always used fairy, but I could see them using a new creature type. They did it when they switched snakes to Naga. Don't understand why that happened, but they did. Mm. So just switch fairy to fae and make everyone mad about that.
That would happen.
I think people would be really sad because there's a few snakes that could have gone into decks that cared about snakes, but they're Nagas. Like Sidisi, the brood tyrant, the original one, she's a Naga. So she can't be played with snakes. I mean, she can be. I mean, sure.
She plays with zombies anyway.
She's a snake.
Yeah, she's a zombie commander.
She...
And then she turned into a zombie.
That's true.
Which is even better.
That's true. So, these were what we've learned about the story. So Garrick is returning, but they said that there's three planeswalkers, correct, in this set?
I don't know if that's... It hasn't
been
confirmed.
I'd be surprised if Will doesn't come back when Rowan is the main picture of the actual novel. Which, by the way, Mark Rosewater also, you had mentioned, said that they share a spark.
They share... I saw that. I haven't been able to re-find the Morrow post. But that Will and Rowan share a spark. Someone asked if they would ever see Rowan and Will on different planes. And Morrow basically replied saying, well, it's kind of impossible because they share a spark. Just kind of nonchalantly throwing that little piece out there.
Okay, so I found it. Shivan Dragonhorde asked Mark Rosewater on August 23rd, would Will or Rowan ever be in a set without the other? And he responded, they share a spark, so that would be hard to do.
So they just have, like, the worst separation anxiety ever.
It's interesting, though. I wonder how they sparked. I bet we'll find out in this next novel.
Definitely in the novel. Or they'll just do it like they did in the first novel, where it's just like, oh, yeah, and then there's spark. Just like the Viashino that just... Viashino showed up, and he died.
Oh, that was so sad. That was so sad in War of the Spark, the actual novel. There was a Viashino... planeswalker that was pulled to Ravnica, he got stabbed, and then there was like two sentences later, that was the end of that. Oh, poor planeswalker.
I want wizards to know that that is now my favorite planeswalker, and they killed them.
We would like our Viashino planeswalker to know what his name was, or her name was, or their name was, and we would like to see what plane they're from.
Yep.
And go to that plane.
Please and thank you.
Please and thanks. The novel coming out is called The Wildered Quest. I believe that comes all out in the fall alongside the set.
Yes. Throne of Eldraine.
Throne of Eldraine, September 2019.
Do you think Throne of Eldraine is going to get you back into playing Paper Standard?
I mean, I had a Paper Standard deck. I was playing Gruul for a long time.
True.
It's just it's easier to get more games in on Arena and Standard.
Mm-hmm.
And for the social aspect, I go into the game shop twice a week to play Commander.
Gotcha.
So I wouldn't mind playing though on Fridays again. But I'm able to play like 80 games with my Standard deck in like 2 hours instead of like two.
True.
In paper. That's the only reason.
Right.
That's literally the only reason, is because I get way more and I can do it whenever I want. So like work ends, I can play Arena for like an hour, or we're waiting to leave and we have like 30 minutes to kill and I'll just go play like four games on Arena real quick.
Right.
And I also do like playing best of one. I don't always play best of three on Arena, and it's so fast to unsleeve and resleeve decks on Arena. That I would say is probably one of the reasons why I don't play Standard as much, is because I constantly have to put together a deck and sleeve them up because I'm not a monster. I don't play unsleeved cards.
Right.
And so it's much easier to just play on Arena. That's the only reason.
Definitely.
How about you?
It really has to win me over. The last time I played Paper Standard was when I was able to play Mono Black Weenies.
And that was Kaladesh.
It was just the beginning of Ixalan. Because I played
Kitesail Freebooter.
Yep. So right at the beginning of Ixalan, that was the last time we both played in the store championship.
Okay. So that was the only time that both of us went undefeated.
Yep.
And we had the wrong number of rounds. So it ended with two people who are undefeated. And they're like, well, that's the end of the round. So who gets the packs and who gets the playmat? I just wanted, I was playing literally for the playmat. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, I'll take the playmat. You can have all the packs then.
And it was perfect.
It was perfect. He got to open all the packs. Mm-hmm. And I have the awesome map of Ixalan playmat.
It's a really cool
playmat. I love that playmat. And so, but we did play it out just to see what would have happened had there been a fourth round and the two of us played. I lost.
Yes. Mono black prevails.
I was playing mono white Oketra's Monument.
Yeah.
That was a throwback and I really liked that. And the funny, I think the even better part of the story was the fact that I was going to play blue white Oketra's Monument.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed up. And I brought my modern deck.
Yep.
And I had no deck to play. And we had like 10 minutes till the event started. So I talked to the shop owner and I said, he usually has like a, like just a basic standard deck. And I had already driven and I said, it was like $5. I said, I'll play whatever you have. Like whatever you have behind the counter. He goes, I don't have a deck. And so there was another guy who heard and said, oh, I have a mono white version of Oketra's Monument you can play. And that just had like the Angel of Invention. Is that what it was called? The one that comes in and makes you get servos.
Yeah, Fabricate 2.
Fabricate 2. Mm-hmm. And so that was really the only difference between what I had or the Cloud Blazer, which was going to draw me cards.
Yep.
And so I said, I'll just play it. It's the same deck I was going to play. Mm-hmm. I went undefeated. Yeah. And I ended up beating Teemer Energy twice.
I dodged Teemer Energy.
Completely. I played both Teemer Energy players.
Yep.
And got there. So I felt like I was the real winner. Not that I
did. No, you did. I beat a jank dinosaurs deck in the round one and I'm like, okay, that's how this tournament's gonna go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And then the last item we have is the Mark Roser Rosewater State of Design 2019 article.
Right.
So he basically looks back at Magic over the year to see how the design worked out, what they did well, what lessons they learned, and he breaks it down by set. So for overall design, they said that research and development is starting to hit the right level of complexity, that they are getting better at hitting the player's desire. So over the last year, the best example was Modern Horizons. They spent a lot of time making sure they understood what themes they could use and gave people things like changelings, slivers, ninjas, and snow permanents, which made everyone happy. And then they said they're embracing new tools to make better designs. For example, collation is a tool they use to ensure a balanced yet random mix of cards and boosters. So part of the success of the Planeswalker theme in War of the Spark was to use a complex collation scheme to ensure that every booster pack had a Planeswalker that appeared in the rarity slot of the Planeswalker, meaning they didn't need their own dedicated all Planeswalker slot in the booster pack because you had rare and you had uncommon, rare, and mythic rare Planeswalkers.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Lessons. They said they could have used more synergy between the sets. They said one of the big shifts over the last few years has been to move away from traditional block structure. A major side effect of this move has been a large number of mechanical themes in standard. The downside is that it's harder to play various sets with one another.
I felt the same way. I felt like once War of the Spark came out, people were just playing War of the Spark cards like the whole time.
And that's kind of how it is, even in Commander.
Producer Ryan agrees.
He plays War of the Spark. That's his favorite set of all time.
It really is.
Hey, what set? What plane does War of the Spark take place on?
Ravnica.
It's Ravnica. Wow. Yeah, it's the best one. And then they said they need to spend more time on pacing. So I think you felt this as well.
My wallet felt it, that's for sure.
Yeah, they said that this year was crammed between War of the Spark and Core 20. Modern Horizons came out between the two. It felt like spoiler season never really ended. Honest to God, it felt like it never ended. And there were so many sets. People said they wanted less. Okay, we wanted more. Now we want a little less. Dial it back on the Magic sets. Specifically referencing Guild of Ravnica and Ravnica Allegiance, they said the highlights were that they executed well on the guilds. All the mechanics played really well. And players liked the tone of those sets. But some of the lessons were that there wasn't enough innovation. They said that when they feel they had the same issue with the Return to Ravnica block, they recreate the feel of Ravnica, but by the original block, but never really innovated on it. They said they've made small additions like the half gold or half hybrid split cards, but they never really re-envisioned the world through a modern design. They said this was done consciously this time because they knew War of the Spark was really going to push the boundaries, but they hope when they come back to Ravnica many years from now, they reinvent it mechanically.
So they're coming back to Ravnica?
I mean, you can assume that every set's available to go back to as long as the world still exists.
Right.
They said many years from now.
Yes.
I'd rather we not leave, but...
So have we confirmed that Ravnica is not a barren wasteland yet?
Yeah, we won. And there were still buildings standing. We as in Ravnikans. We, me.
Karn's just going to oops and blow up on Ravnica. You're going to be so sad.
I'm going to be really sad if that happens. They said the mechanics lacked oomph. So they said nothing really had the feeling of this is different or it was quirky or very flavorful. They said this was due to the nature of guilds. They said having to have five mechanics per set forces you to have to keep the complexity down so that you can draft them. So, but they said that everybody liked the mechanics and they worked well. There was just mm-hmm. nothing real special.
Right.
And then Ravnica Allegiance Limited did not play as well as Guilds of Ravnica. So they said that after you drafted it a few times, it was no longer interesting to draft.
Yeah, it got stale.
War of the Spark, though, separately, they said players love the Planeswalker theme. I agree.
Yeah.
The fact that the set was based on a single event that took place over just like a short period of time, mm-hmm. they said came through loud and clear. People understood it. And then people liked Proliferate coming back, and they liked the Amass mechanic. The lessons, though, was that there were too many rare and mythic rare bombs. They said that specifically the God Eternals were the biggest issue. There were no way to answer them in Limited.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes you lose to them God Eternal Oketra in Commander because you just can't deal with it.
It's so good.
Another lesson is that the static ability of some of the Planeswalkers were hard to remember. So the uncommon Planeswalkers have a static ability that is always in play.
Mm-hmm.
Like Narset, Parter of Veils, each opponent can't draw more than one card each turn.
Mm-hmm.
They said that because every Planeswalker had a static ability and they had so many, some of the abilities were things that just didn't come up often, making them really hard to track.
Yep.
They said the Planeswalker that got sighted the most was Narset, Parter of Veils, because when you got hit by it, it felt really bad.
Yep.
Because you're like, cool, I'm going to draw three. I can get back in the game. Oops, no, I can't draw any because I drew for turn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they said, in retrospect, they needed to be a bit more careful with the uncommon static abilities. And then this one is a spoiler. So if you didn't read the War of the Spark novel, like skip ahead like a minute. The final lesson was that the biggest complaint they got was that they did not have a card for Dak Faden or his death.
Oh my gosh.
So they said he dies in the book, but due to the timing of the novel being written, they didn't know early enough to get his death included into the set, and they had not included him as a main character in the actual set, and that they said having major disconnects between the big story point and the set is really frustrating, and we're trying to figure out behind the scenes if there's anything they can do to change that process to avoid like things like that specifically in the future.
Yep.
So there's been one Dak Faden card ever printed, and he did.
Yep.
So I don't know. Unless you go back in time.
Which
Teferi, Teferi's still alive.
Well, or like a Magic Origins set.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So that was the other lesson that they learned from War of the Spark. Modern Horizons, though, they said highlights, players enjoyed the time spiral-like goodness of the set. It was specifically just nostalgia and bringing back a bunch of mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
They said the flavor resonated really well. They said characters like Urza, Yawgmoth, Sera, and Pashalik Mons finally got a card.
Yeah.
And people who follow the story, Vorthosis, were super excited about that. And the set delivered on a lot of long desired themes. So slivers and ninjas, changelings and snow permanents specifically. They said that he has a long checklist and that he got to check a ton of things off his list for this set.
It was a lot of fun.
Lessons, though, they said the name misled people. It said it was the first ever straight to modern set, which is why modern's in the name. And they spent a lot of time making sure the set added cards to modern, but there was much more to the set than just that. And they could have done a better job setting those expectations.
Hmm.
They said it was too easy to get into traps when drafting. So, they said they would like to have spent a little more time educating the drafters about what was and wasn't viable to draft. Perhaps you were going for snow when you had no snow permanence. I didn't draft the set, mm-hmm. so I'm not sure. But it said that it led to frequent draft issues where someone took a card early and assumed it implied a theme that wasn't actually supported because some of the 40 plus themes had one mechanic.
Yeah.
That's so true. You might have grabbed it thinking you were going to get like six more mm-hmm. and that was it.
I saw a guy with a winning draft deck before that was 35 forests and he played the green enchantment where if you discard a card, you get a bear.
The Iula's Influence?
Yeah.
You discard a card. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then players didn't get enough chance to draft the set. So Mark Rosewater said the tight window between Core 2020 and that set coming out just affected it. And then shops weren't getting eight people to play that. People were like, well, let's go play Core 2020. And so he said he's hoping with time that this might be the draft environment players turn to when there's a lull between sets and they just go, well, let's go draft that set now.
It seems like they tried to make it like the Battle Bond draft, but it's more expensive.
Premium prices affect things.
But the Battle Bond draft format was so awesome.
I think I did it two times, and we did Battle Bond. We did two at a giant. We won because we realized because you can switch your decks in between your sideboard cards, mm-hmm. and it was just play the mill card. What was that mill card that we were winning with? I don't remember, but we ended up winning after we got utterly destroyed by it the game before.
Oh yeah,
that was a fun set.
It was.
We did not open Will and Rowan, which was sad.
Yeah,
but it would have been really cool to have one in our decks and tutor and do all that, you know. Yeah, but cool. Anyway, and then the last set was Core 2020. So they said the highlights are that it drafted very well. The set provided cards for a lot of different formats, and the set had a lot of cards aimed at lower tier standard decks. So you got to build things like Elementals, which isn't necessarily low tier. It's not tier one, right. But you also got to circle back to Vampires. And then one of the lessons he said is the set didn't have strong theme and that some players are starting to feel planeswalker fatigue and that they did not like the aging Nissa or aging Chandra planeswalkers, the triple Chandra. They said some people had their fill of planeswalkers, although the beloved planeswalker Chandra and Chandra fans enjoyed Chandra.
Yeah.
So he says, in conclusion, he says, looking back, he thinks it was a good year for Magic design, but it leaves with takeaways that players seem more enamored when they're willing to push boundaries and try new things instead of sticking to the status quo. And War of the Spark and Modern Horizons were the breakaway sets of this year.
I'm surprised there wasn't a note in there about Pro finally printed a crisscross applesauce commander. I mean, Planeswalker.
A Pro?
A Pro to finally printing. A crisscross
applesauce. Because you're sitting crisscross applesauce. That's the one that makes the two elementals, right?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And adds counters to all of your red planeswalkers.
Yeah, it's a good card. He says, looking forward, they're now resting. They are not resting on their laurels and are going to be trying new things. So he's interested in writing this a year from now and seeing how things went in 2020.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see this new set, the Throne of Eldraine.
And I like the fact that we're going to have kind of like a version of the Expeditions again, but they're not.
Because they're in their own separate
correct.
Packs.
So like you're guaranteed to get one now.
Right.
But I think that pack's $25.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to buy at least one.
Yeah, probably.
You got to try it out.
Yeah, probably.
So,
I know Morrow is very excited about this set because he can actually throw in more silly fantasy characters into this.
Wait, like the Gingerbread Man, which you said they released its name?
His name is Ginger Brute.
Ginger Brute.
Ginger Brute.
He's running away from like an oven in the like the witch's house.
Yes.
It's pretty cool. Well, I think that's it for today.
Yeah.
So if you want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter.
You cannot find me on Twitter.
You can look for me at AT Flory or the podcast at Guardian Project Pod. We also like to hear from you, so send along your comments and topics you want us to talk about. We can talk about them on the next episode by emailing us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com. You can't find Mike anywhere.
No,
you other can't than find his me. Voice on this podcast.
I'm so hidden. Call me Kephas.
Call the hidden hand.
Because I'm hidden.
Well, that's it for this week, everyone, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
How long was this episode?
5 minutes.
Ooh, that's a long one. Yeah, there was no jokes or anything this week. That was a lot.
Magic jokes.
The people that I think that are listening to us are just magic players. They're not ones that don't.
Yeah, that's your.